Delving into local history today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Gina Shantz is deeply involved in history, especially of Colonel Davenport's home. We'll get details on Scribble.
Gina, it's good to have you here, finally. We've been trying to get you for some time, and other things have intruded. But you're here specifically because you've had a long-time affair with George Davenport.
Yeah, I have.
And I'm not using affair lightly. Can you tell us when and how that began?
Oh, it began a long time ago when I joined Questers and they were taking on the Davenport House as a preservation project. And we didn't really know, we as a group didn't really know very much about George Davenport, and I thought we needed to remedy that. So I started delving into who the man was and how we could furnish that house and show it to the public, what kind of stories we could tell.
Okay, and when in the process of just going back and looking up material on Davenport did you get hooked? And hooked, I mean, you really are one of the people that is hooked on somebody.
I got hooked right away. We started researching
Why?
As a group, and I just couldn't leave the story. There were too many unanswered questions. I kept thinking of more questions, and I needed to know. I really wanted to know about the family, about Mrs. Davenport and about his stepdaughter, Susan Lewis Goldsmith.
And the children, right?
And the children, true, to a certain extent.
Which nobody is quite clear about, but you are, right?
Okay, there are three children.
Yes.
George L. Davenport, George Lost Davenport. We usually just refer to him as George L. and Bailey. Those were the two sons by Susan Lewis Goldsmith. And then he had a daughter, Elizabeth, who married Nicholas Ferkel.
It sounds like kind of a messy relationship, though, as it's told.
You know, yes, it's hard to explain, and I have no answers for why it came about that way. I could speculate a little, but truthfully, we don't really know exactly how that all came about. Margaret was quite a bit older than George Davenport when she came to Rock Island. She was a widow, and she had a daughter who was 15 at the time, and the daughter was actually the mother of the two sons.
Hmm. Well, things, there are different arrangements in all families.
And well, I think for a long time, people pussyfooted around that whole thing in the Quad Cities.
They did.
Until you got going, and I think you have prodded people into more or less accepting the way things are.
I've had many people say, I just can't accept that. It's just not right. But the thing is, I can't change it. I'm not asking you to accept it or whatever. It's just the way it is, you know?
Now, your interest in Davenport eventually, how soon did it lead to a thesis? Did you do the graduate
probably.
Work because of Davenport or do graduate?
I got to the point where I felt like I couldn't go any further without some study, serious study, and I needed the credentials. So I went to take a class at the Graduate Center from Dr. John Hallwas, and I quickly realized that I wasn't an English major anymore. I was more into history, and so I went to University of Iowa to study American studies. And that's when I wrote my thesis.
And then you didn't stop there.
No. The last thing that that they asked me when I was defending my thesis was, so where are you going now? And I said, well, there's some questions I have about how George Davenport earned his money. And they looked at me and said, really? And it went from there.
What do you mean, how he earned his money?
Well, a lot of us thought that he earned his, that he became rich and famous because of his fur trading activities. But on deeper study, he really broke even with the fur trade. He made money in lead, although that's a big unknown area of research. But he really made his money in real estate. Hmm. He became a land merchant, and I think he earned more money that way than he ever did in the Indian trade.
You mean by he bought the land at Black?
He bought land cheaply, sometimes at the tax sales, and sometimes straight from the government, and turned around when settlers were coming in and investors and speculators were coming in, he sold to them. The other way he made his money was in the city of Davenport. The land actually belonged to LeClaire, but George would buy a certain amount of land from him. They divided it up into lots, and you can sell lots for a lot more money than you can just as farmland.
One of the stories that circulates around the area and has for years is that Rock Island should be named Davenport. Davenport should be named LeClaire. Each should be named Rock Island. That is part of this whole business of speculation, isn't it?
Yes, because, first of all, there was a town of LeClaire long before there was a town of Davenport. The name was already taken.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as Rock Island, I think people knew Rock Island. They thought it was a name that spoke to people all over the East because of Black Hawk. Black Hawk was associated with Rock Island.
But there were a bunch of Rock Islands. There was Rock Island City, Rock Island Mills.
Rock Island, the island.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. It was.
But the name for this city that's now Rock Island was first Stevenson.
True.
Yeah,
because
that's right.
And Davenport wanted that to be Davenport, didn't he?
You know, I don't know.
Somebody was angry at him at the state legislature and made sure that it wasn't named Davenport.
That I've never actually been able to nail down in a document. But that is a story.
That's the trouble with you historians.
Facts.
Yeah.
We do. And that's one of my problems is that the work that I have done is heavily documented. I mean heavily documented. I want to know for sure. I don't want any criticism. I don't want anyone saying, where did you get that story?
Well, you in fact, I mean, where have you gotten all this material? You've actually gone to England, right?
I have gone to England, and that was probably the greatest revelation that I had when I went to England.
Okay, tell us about it.
I took my oldest daughter, and as we were flying in over Lincolnshire into Humberside Airport, my daughter looked at me and she said, Mom, it looks just like Iowa. And, you know, she was right. And I realized that, you know, immigrants, and George Davenport was, after all, an immigrant, choose land that looks a lot like home. And the other revelation was when I started delving into the year that he went back to Lawath, where he was from, and realized that a lot of the ideas that he incorporated into his land development here in the Quad Cities was actually inspired by what was happening at the time in Lawath. They had opened what they called the Lawath Navigation, which was a canal which opened Lawath to the sea. And the part where his sister was living was called the Riverhead. And it was a mix of houses and industry, markets. It was a relatively new area in town. And this is what was happening at the time George was visiting home. Mm-hmm. And I think he brought those ideas back here.
Are there any actual Davenport records in England that you were able to track down?
Some. I looked at church records. We pretty much identified him as John King. And that's based on a couple things. One is the baptismal records or christening records, and a memorial that no longer exists, only recorded to his brother. George Davenport's name was actually on the tombstone. And then his sister's will.
Now, wait a minute. Is he named King or Davenport?
His name was King, but on the monument for his brother, it was Davenport.
How did that happen?
I assume George made provisions for the monument when mm-hmm. he was there in England. And then the will of his sister names both of George Davenport's sons as her heirs.
That's interesting. How did he pick Davenport?
Good question. Good question. I have no idea. I always tell when I have this question and I have to ask myself, is it really unusual? Is there something nefarious going on? We've not found anything.
I think that has happened before, that when people change location, change occupations, they want to change themselves, and they change their names. They choose a new name.
Some of my ancestors did that when they came over here from Denmark.
Really?
Yeah, changed to what was Peterson, and they discovered that everybody in near Spirit Lake, Iowa, was Peterson, so they changed it to Dahl, which happens to be the royal family name of Denmark, too.
So
and they went up in the world.
That happened with my husband's name, too. He would have been something very common in Sweden, and his father actually was von Schantz, but he didn't take the von part. He just took the Schantz when he came here.
Where did Tweet come from?
Tweet, T-V-E-D-T. It's just too hard to say in English. Do you know what it means? You go into a forest, and there's a deep, dark forest, and all of a sudden you come to a little clearing where the light comes through.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tweet.
It is.
Yeah.
A tweet.
Yeah. I like that.
But so, doesn't Davenport talk to you?
So one of the controversies about Davenport claims that he bought Blackhawk's land to protect it from.
Yeah.
You're claiming he may have done it to make money.
I think he had both in mind. He knew the writing was on the wall. They knew that it was an official policy of the government at that time. George was he had no favoritism towards Jackson, and he realized there was nothing he could do. So they continued to trade with the Sauk and Meskwaki until the time that they had to go and. Then they owned it. He owned it in partnership with Farnham. I think it's pretty clear that they had both ideas in mind.
What happened to Farnham? He just kind of disappeared.
Farnham died of cholera. He died after the Black Hawk War during the cholera epidemic.
There's somebody you should write about.
Farnham is really fascinating.
The story of what happened, how Farnham got here, he's literally the first man who has circumnavigated the globe on foot.
Oh, that's right. He was the one who went to the Pacific Northwest
got
and
captured,
was stranded there.
Right. Ended up in Siberia, went across Siberia, ended up in the Astor office in Denmark and said, here I am. And it got paid full for all the 10 years he'd been captive and
right.
escaped.
Yeah,
so
he really wanted to go to the Southwest too, but they stuck
why
him
you,
here.
Why don't you do that? I mean, nobody, that would make a great adolescent novel.
That probably would.
Wouldn't it?
Well, maybe that's my
Do you have any
project.
Interest in turning Davenport into which would make a good novel, too, I would think.
People have asked me about doing a novel, but I don't have a novel in me. I'm pretty straightforward facts. I want to document it.
You have now touched on the difference between me and Tweet.
You are Mr. Fact, are you?
I prefer facts, the frozen truth, however painful. And believe me, most facts are painful.
Well, has Davenport, the interest in Davenport led you to other interests locally too that you've done? But obviously not with the same affair-like passion.
Well, you know, the Davenport story has many facets. And I'll have to tell you, my manuscript has 23 chapters. Each one is a separate story. And it has a different characters in it.
So the manuscript is a growth from your dissert, from your thesis.
Absolutely, yes. I started working immediately after graduating with my master's. I started delving into those aspects of the story that I still had questions about. And I have to say I still have questions, but I have pretty much stopped researching at this point.
Well, now you get to make things up, huh?
I've kind of gone on to other stories, but they really don't have any relation to the Davenport story. They're just local stories.
Is there really that much documentation from that period?
Absolutely, especially when you look at the fur trade, because that was highly regulated by the government. They produced more paper than you can imagine. There is a lot of information.
I suppose that was to try to keep things honest.
Yes. Yeah. They had to record how many furs they took in and how much they sold for them. And, you know, George had to get a license every year, so he had to produce a documentation on how many crew he had, how many men he hired, how much inventory he had. Yeah, mm-hmm. All that was recorded.
It's, you know, there are so many interesting things that flow from that. His murder, for example, was the basis of a novel or a book, The Banditti of the Prairie. Have you read that book?
Not only have I read the book, but I have gotten copies of the original manuscript from Indiana University.
Is that an honest book?
You bet it is. It really, when you compare the published book with the handwritten manuscript, it dovetails quite well with what we know that was published in the paper. And remember, that story was carried all over the United States, as far east as New York City.
When I read it, it was a revelation. I went out to walk to places that were identified, you know, where the men were executed, and it's in an alley back of what used to be, you know, the Jewish Center. Anyway, I could walk to it today. And all the things about that story, I thought, this is just amazing. It almost sounded like a novel. That's what got me.
Yeah, but it's basically true. They didn't really have to embellish much because it was pretty sensational to begin with.
That's a book that's out of print long ago, isn't it?
Actually, they still have the copyright to it. You can still get copies of it.
Oh,
I don't
you
know
can.
If it's yeah, they
you can University get anything of, on Amazon you want.
Uh-huh. Well, I have a beat up old copy somewhere in the attic.
Me too.
I treasure it.
Right.
Who was the guy who wrote that?
Edward Bonney.
Edward Bonney, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
One of the things that has always interested me are the Davenport's two sons, George and Bailey. How do they turn out so differently? Not that average families don't have different kids, but...
Well, you know, they were groomed for different reasons. I mean, George L., the oldest, was groomed to take over the fur trade and then enter the mercantile business. And Bailey was a bit younger. He was, 6 or 7 years younger. And his interest was in the agriculture. He really liked horses, horse racing, horse trading, horse breeding. And so he was groomed to take over the agricultural aspects of the Davenport lands. And I think they had very different personalities to begin with. But they certainly were encouraged in different ways.
By George himself?
Yes. And perhaps their mother.
Okay.
Bailey seemed to be very close to his mother. But that's not to say that George L. wasn't. But they were
But Bailey's the one who became mayor of Davenport. And
mayor of Rock Island.
Of Rock Island, I mean,
right.
Excuse
yeah,
me.
Please.
Right.
So they, remember, they didn't I, name
they
it
didn't
Davenport
make it
Sweet.
Davenport.
They named it Rock Island.
Right.
Well, the Bailey spread, you know, from Longview Park on down. That was a huge swath.
Well, all the way down through Moline. I mean, one of the reasons that Rock Island and Moline are situated so funny is that Bailey never, you know, let that land go or, you know, invested much in it himself.
Well, he had mines. He was into gravel and sand and coal.
Right.
And but he was also mayor of Rock Island 5 different times, I think.
Yeah, it's that is an amazing story. And I don't know that people pay much attention to it. It's our local history is so rich that you'd think that people would dig into it. But also the availability of books. When are you going to get your manuscript published?
Well, I have recently given it to Heritage Documentaries. Kurt Roseman is supposed to be reviewing it now with the idea that we will publish it in this next year.
All 23 chapters?
All, at least, yeah. And all the documentation that goes with it.
That's going to be a big book, Gina.
Well, yeah, everyone tells me it's an awfully long story, but my husband read it and he said, you know, this is a good story. So if he can get through it, I think anybody could.
Oh, that's, and so are you in the process of dealing with editing and correction and all that stuff?
Just starting. Off and on, I've done a lot of proofing and some self-editing, but that's one of the things I'm a little worried about is someone else editing it, but I'll get through it. It still needs a few maps. That maps need to be redrawn, and there needs to be a good, snappy title. And
do you have a running
index.
Title right now?
Well, Judy Belfer came up with a wonderful title recently. She said, call it Murdered on the 4th of July. And that might be the snappiest title we've come up with yet. So that's my working title at the moment.
Okay.
But it does change from time to time.
Well, you know, you could The Awful Truth About Davenport might make an interesting title, too.
Well, you know, whenever you ask someone, what do you know about George Davenport, they always know he was murdered.
Yep,
if they know
true.
Nothing else,
the
they know
thing.
He was murdered.
And when you recount that in your book, as I'm sure you do you reference Banditti of the Prairie?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Were there other sources for that?
Many. As I said, the story was carried in all the newspapers up and down the river and as far east as New York City. And several years ago, Kathy Walsh and I collected as many of those and transcribed them and put them in Augustana's library. So there's a transcription of all the newspaper articles that we could find. And in addition to that, there was a small publication that was put out by the I forget which newspaper that we got on loan from the Illinois State Archives that recounts the entire murder story as well.
Well, how long has it taken from start to finish to do this? Well, we haven't got the finish yet, that's right.
I started actually researching in 1977.
Wow.
But you have to remember, I have a family, and I went to school, and, you know, things get interrupt your life.
Well, what's interesting is you seem to be as keen today as you must have been at the beginning.
I still am. You're right. You're right. There are still things I'd like to know about George Davenport and his businesses and whatever. But
for example, what specifically?
The lead business. I know that he dealt in lead. He was kind of a middleman. He would go up to Galena and collect his lead, and then he would take it down to St. Louis. What I don't know is exactly how much, what quantity he took down to St. Louis, nor do I know how much he was paid for it. That might have been a good source of his wealth, but I have no idea how much that lead really generated.
And why are there no records of things like that?
I just don't know who the merchants were. I have an idea, one of the merchants that bought land, but there are no records.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike the American Fur Company. Now, the American Fur Company did buy lead from time to time, but that was not the source of his trading.
What was the interest in lead? Was it for guns and stuff?
For sheeting, for roofing, for pipes, in the flint glass industry, as well as for bullets.
That's what left us with all these lead pipes that poison the water.
Right.
Oh, dear.
You got it.
Are there any other details you're trying to track down?
Oh, there are a few. There's a diary that's in Wisconsin Historical Society that I should look at some point that talks a little bit about life at Fort Armstrong. I've been interested in Fort Armstrong all along and the relationship between the fort and the Davenport House. And so that might be of interest, although I don't think it would necessarily go into the book. There are probably some other. I still would like to go back to England and do some more research in Lawith. I still don't really know the story of his becoming a merchant sailor. The story that Wilkie tells is that he was apprenticed to a tailor and then he ran away to sea. His father took him to whatever. I don't know who he made arrangements with, any of that story. I'd kind of like to know more about that.
You think there are documents that would give you that information?
There should be apprenticeship records, and if you ran away from your apprenticeship, that's an indictable offense in England. So you would think that there would be some records. And if he didn't run away, and the way the story is written in Wilkie is that his father took him to someone to become a merchant seaman. So there must, if that part is right, then it wouldn't be somehow legal to break that apprenticeship.
Well, I can see the title of your book is already George Davenport, An Incomplete History. Because if you want to complete it, there's another 20 years just described.
I've been waiting for someone to pick up the story where I leave
like
off.
Anybody who's ever written a dissertation finally gets to a point where you say, that's all there is. There isn't any more information. But... I can tell it gnaws on you that there are things that you would like to find.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, you can always keep looking, Gina.
I will. I probably will.
Well, a revised edition sometime in the future.
If I should live so long.
Is there a suggested date for publication? Or
No. Right now, as I mentioned, Kurt Roseman is reviewing it. He hasn't actually said, yes, we will publish it. But I don't think he can turn me down, can he?
Well, we can't. Gina, thank you very much. This has been a wonderful, wonderful and revealing interview.
Thank you very much for inviting me. It's been fun for me, too.
Okay. Well, we've just about used up all our time. Thank you very much for joining us today in this very interesting interview with Gina Shantz on Colonel Davenport. Tweet and I'll be back next week, and we hope you will, too, for the next edition of Scribble.